I'm Jo Muirhead, and this is the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast, a podcast for health professionals who want to know how we continue to serve our patients and our clients without sacrificing ourselves to the work. More than a conversation on making money or just burning out, this podcast has been created to progress conversations that we need to have to ensure that we know who we are so that we can serve those who need our help, so that we can actually be the significant difference in the world. It is an incredible honor to bring to you another episode of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast. This is episode number 29, and I am still loving this whole podcasting thing. And this morning, I am interviewing an incredible human being who I have gotten to know over the last couple of years, who is doing very different things here in Australia in terms of mental health. Her name is Dr. Bee Lim, but I'm going to get her to introduce herself to you. So take it away, Bee. Who are you? What do you do? How are you turning up in the world?
Hi, everyone. Hi, Jo. It's an honor, Jo, to be on your podcast. I am Bee Lim, and befitting to my name, I tend to buzz around and wear a few different hats. I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm a group practice owner. And at heart, I'm very much a scientist practitioner. I'm very passionate about looking at evidence-based, innovative approaches to enhance reach and also to improve mental well-being of our users. I grew up in Malaysia. It's a beautiful blend of cultures, languages, and foods, and that has just afforded me the abilities to speak a few different languages and also several Asian dialects. And I think that is a very important part about bridging the cultural gaps in mental health care. I often joke about, in terms of the proudest moments that my late father had of me, is not about all the alphabets behind my name, but it's when I shared with him an experience of doing a psychological assessment and mental health first aid with a refugee of Cambodian background in Teochew dialect.
Wow.
So I think like the diversity, the inclusivity about mental health care is a very important part of my work. And I have my training in psycho-oncology and positive psychology. And I think like the unique intersection of these two areas have really shaped my work as a trauma therapist. In my everyday work, I work with people who experience complex trauma. And it's humbling, it's profound. And this is that place that I really witnessed that incredible strength and resilience of people who've been through dark times. And then also then we get to the interesting part about our conversations and why I'm here today. Last year, with encouragement from yourself, Jo, and also a few of the health professionals that we're friends with, I decided to take a leap into starting a venture that fuses mobile game technology and evidence-based therapy. I do firmly believe that we can make mental health accessible anywhere, anytime, but also fun, enjoyable, and if I dare say, delightful.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Imagine therapy experience as play, yet transform lives.
Imagine therapy as play, yet it transforms lives. Like, we could just hit stop now and people would be walking around going, imagine that. So, and this is why I'm so excited to have you here today, because when you came to me and said, Jo, I've got this idea, I've thought about this, I've got some research which we'll get to, and you started explaining it to me. And we were talking at the time about a specific population. So we were talking about early career doctors in our hospitals off the back of the pandemic.
Yes.
And they were turning up into your clinic and they are just running from trauma to trauma to trauma to trauma. And you were witnessing some of the behaviors that they were using to try and slow their brains down and slow their heart rate down. And you went, there's got to be a more effective way that is helping their brains right now. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what you were witnessing to bring about this gamification of therapy?
And I think like, Joe, the interesting thing is that I'm not a heavy gamer myself. Yeah. I'm not a serious gamer myself. And the first piece of research studies that actually really come to me was when I was an intern psychologist. So I was doing a late night Tetris playing. So definitely Tetris.
Tetris. Tetris. That all took us way back, didn't it?
But I think like that first piece of research papers is really showing that Tetris has the ability to reduce trauma symptoms in veterans. And I went, what?
Did everybody just hear that? Like, this research, when B was an intern psychologist, so it wasn't yesterday, right? But there was actually research that was demonstrating that veterans playing Tetris was helping to reduce their symptoms. All right, tell us more. I just wanted to make sure we didn't lose that because, you know, we were driving or making a cup of coffee. Like, keep going, please.
I love your enthusiasm around that. And I was middle of the night, so excited, definitely emboldened by the findings. And I took the findings to my workplace and very boldly suggested that we turn one of our meeting rooms into a Tetris playing rooms. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. Picture a scene. You have therapists, you have clients, and we are bonding, playing falling blocks of Tetrominoes. At that time, I can't explain why it works. And you can imagine that the idea did raise a few eyebrows in terms of she really lost it. and didn't gain any traction at that time. But I think like two different years of like training and also my own experience of like therapy and all that, which I'll love to actually like share in a bit more details at the symposium as well, is that it really just kind of come together to show that I think like if we can combine video game play to deliver a mental health solution, clients can be more engaged. And I don't have to have professionals come into my office totally burnt out and then have to shamefully tell me that, oh my goodness, B, I played video games last night. And the response that I often gave them really surprised them because I go like, oh, you play video games. Tell me more.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so, but again, I love what I love about it and why I get so excited and I'm so enthusiastic is because we hear so much negativity about gaming and yes, we've got some dangers there. Like we can't ignore the fact that we've got young people who are being influenced in unhelpful ways. We can't ignore the fact that gaming has created a whole new addiction that we need to be mindful of. But again, you're going to the heart or to the soul to meet people where they're at and going, your life is already so hard. And, you know, if we talk about doctors who we know have incredibly high burnout rates, unreasonably high suicide rates, like that research is terrifying. And we're saying to them, please turn up with 100% of your mental acuity after you've worked an 80-hour week and look after the next trauma patient that comes through the doors, right? To actually then say, could you please come and do your trauma homework? And your trauma homework is going to be A, B, C, and D. You can imagine these people just going, I just want some space in my head. I can't even remember the last time I saw a whole human body with all of its limbs intact. Like, and I'm not saying that to be horrible or to be triggering, but this is some of the stuff that your people were coming to you with. Am I right?
That's right. I think like at the same time, I hear your concern. And as a parent with a young child, I definitely think about this in terms of like what level of screen time is okay or what level of gaming is okay so that we don't him into developing, say, like internet gaming disorder. But research have again and again shown that even longitudinal studies have shown that from a youth gaming perspective, youth that play more than 35 hours a week, potentially, they will develop an internet gaming disorder. But as long as we play less than 19 hours per week, none of those people in that group eventually move into the pathological gaming group. So I think like there is all these different ideas, the debates from like two ends. And oftentimes, I think like in therapy, we talk about it with clients as well in terms of any behavior have two ends to it. Mm. And what we're trying to do is that we are trying to find that healthy medium. And what is that healthy medium that allow us to have the benefits, but then also not kind of going into a state of dysfunction or clinical disorders.
Right. I love the way that you brought me back to almost to grounding and earth there. I did actually put, you can't see, but I did actually plant my feet firmly on the ground there. And I went, you're right. We always do talk about the extremes, like neither extreme is good. Right. So, and I don't think, and this is one of the reasons why I've created the symposium, thank you for bringing that up, is because we need to be talking about and thinking about these issues. We need to be getting better at having conversations with anybody who turns up in our clinic or in our waiting room who's gaming. Like, how many times do you see people sitting in your waiting room stuck on their phone? Are you ever interested in what they're doing? Like walking around the street, standing in a queue. Like my husband plays a game on his phone all the time. And we all know I have a dog. His name is Smudge. Smudge and I want to knock it out of his hand. We just want to knock it. And he's like, this is how I relax. This is how I tune out. This is how I, you know, just leave me alone to do this. And I'm like, huh, after talking to B and now, you know, Jake, who's been on the podcast before, this isn't actually unhealthy. Yeah. I have a problem with it.
Yeah.
So how do you think the uptake is going to be? Oh, hang on, before we go there, talk to us about your concept. Tell us what it is.
So I think like the concept of it is really thinking about the elements of like gaming and also blending it with evidence-based therapy. And the evidence-based therapy that's is of choice at the moment is EMDR, just mainly because that is my special interest. I think like, yeah. Work with people with complex trauma, so that's that. But I do hear you, Joe, around this, just mainly because I think like there's so many myths,
yeah,
around video game that I'm so looking forward to actually have a conversations with people about, and my husband, he is totally sick of me talking about it. You talk about your husband playing, yeah, Joe, and we always thought that video games are for kids. And even when I talk about these ideas with my colleagues, they go like, oh, is it going to be a game for children or adolescents? And I go like, no, it's for professionals. So potentially like the 15 to 35 year old that is experiencing burnt out from their day-to-day work. And they did a fascinating study a few years ago with 2,842 full-time white-collar workers. 8% of the study population were actually high-level executives. So we're talking CEOs, CFOs, presidents of big organizations.
Mm-hmm.
This group actually reported higher frequency of casual gameplay.
Wow.
And the most important or the most cited reason of them engaging in casual gameplay is to give themselves a mental break so that they can go into their work being more able to solve problems, being able to think creatively. And I think like this piece of research will be so interesting to you and your listeners, Joel, is that they look at laparoscopic surgeon who were gamers.
Wow.
And so laparoscopic surgeon who were gamers, they were shown to be able to perform their surgery quicker while maintaining the necessary precision in the operating room. So if you think about it, holy, if I were to be on the operating table,
wow,
I want my surgeon to have positive emotions. They have taken their mental break. They have actually like played a game and they're also enjoying positive mental health.
Yeah. I want that to
be to me.
In fact, B, with all the surgery that I had over the last couple of years, I made sure I was the first person on the list. Like I demanded that. Because I didn't want my surgeon turning up after already being in surgery for 4 hours.
Hello, it's Alyssa Elgersma with Real Connections Counseling. I am excited to be contributing to this year's International Future Proofing Health Professional Symposium. I am, as the rookie / newbie to the counseling world, I am looking forward to sharing my excitement and my questions with all of you, and I'm really excited to learn some things that I was not taught in grad school. Let's be honest here. Please make sure you've registered, and I will see you in September.
So this is fascinating that and we will make this research available on the podcast, but we're going to be talking into more depth of this in the symposium. So I know that this is going to be fascinating. Now, I know it's not your area of expertise, but do you think that there will be correlations about gameplay and about incorporating gameplay with the evidence base of EMDR, but also for people like first responders? For okay, you're nodding your head. Okay, you can see it moving into those populations. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I think I'd say there are some touches with ICU staff and with first line responders, and the results are fascinating, and it's amazing. And we're not thinking about game as a replacement for therapy, but we want to be able to have the first responders or health professionals who are really burnt out to be able to access some of this way of relaxation, mental break, and potentially some level of therapy as well, just so that we are better equipping them to be able to go back to do their jobs. Joe, I just read about this piece of research yesterday that I thought you found interesting, because in Mount Sinai hospitals in the States, they're actually starting to turn some of the rooms into what they call recharge rooms. And the recharge rooms, the staff could actually book in like 15 minutes of the recharge room to engage in immersive environment, to be able to relax, to be able to unwind in those rooms. And sometimes these rooms have like different kind of like therapy like elements, whether it's in terms of people being able to play games, like listen to music, there's aromatherapy and different things like that. But I think like there is definitely a space for creating some of these experiences that the professionals can unwind, take a break, but not disengage or dissociate because of a busy workday.
Wow. Okay, sorry. I'm now struggling to formulate the next part of my questions. So middle-aged white woman with a 23-year-old child, I've always had this belief that gaming is unproductive, that it's going to foster laziness, it's going to destroy brain cells. That you go from, and I'm being extreme, but it's like we've all heard our grandparents say, just go outside and play. In my day, we used to just play. But what you have very clearly said is that this is about helping people engage in play. And in 2023, this is how a lot of us play.
That's right.
So the days when I used to play with physical dolls and dress them up or have tea parties or go outside and make mud pies because I was that kid, thanks, Mum, or, you know, be climbing trees. Like that was me in my day. But that's not how people play. What is our experience of play in 2023? What do we do?
A lot of these plays are still really important. And when I was thinking a little bit more about the concept of play and even slides in terms of it, we call it like the happy child part in schema therapy. I did kind of consider like what's play. And play looks very different for different people. And we need to actually tailor it to ourselves, to our clients. And this is a fascinating kind of like case study or story as well. So we talk about some of the games, say, for example, like Pokemon Go. So it's a game that people will go around and collect different Pokemons. And back then, we have actually a friend who is a full-time software developer, holding a job, having all these different responsibilities, walk 500 kilometers to collect 140 Pokemons, and he becomes one of the first person in New Zealand who collects all the Pokemons. And it's quite an achievement in itself. But if you unpack it, then we go like, who walked 500 kilometers? What can motivate you enough to walk 500 kilometers? And I think the motivators for us is all different. For me, potentially can be food, given that I'm Malaysian, or coffee. For some of these people, it's games, and that's totally okay. Or for some other people, it can be for nature or scenery. And it doesn't have to be limited to just one thing. And I think that I definitely hear in terms of going outside and play and all that. But the truth is that if you are 2 o'clock, midnight, and you are in your bed and you're feeling that distress, I wouldn't necessarily encourage anyone to go out and hide a mountain to go and have that experience of play. I want them to have something that is accessible, that can bring them to an environment that's still infused with nature, that they can regulate in many ways.
Gosh, this is a powerful conversation, because I have walked the length of the Camino this year because of a game.
Oh, wow.
So, and it's called the Conqueror Challenge. And so as a rehabilitation professional, I'm right. Oh, we no longer take dogs for a walk as our first step in getting people moving. We now go play Pokemon Go. Like, this is now something we can almost, inverted commas, prescribe. It's like, this is how we're going to get, especially some of the young people that we work with and who have got, you know, a range of problems going outside and being a part of the world. I'm just sitting here going, oh my God, imagine that. Imagine being able to come back to them and go, look at how much activity you've done this week. You're feeling better. You're breathing better. You know, I guess you've got a little bit of discomfort in your legs, but you know what? That's called, you know, delayed onset muscle soreness. And you used to get that when you went to the gym. Like, there's so many conversations we can have about that. I had never, see, this is why this podcast is amazing. My tool belt for my clinical work is just expanding. And that way I don't get stale and grumpy and old. Which is very cool.
And I think, Joe, you definitely bring up a really good point about that as well, is that when we work with older clients, oftentimes what's their motivation is it's time, it's that quality time with their younger ones. And a few years when we have another kind of like colleague working on a game called Flutter, it's about butterflies. And I think it's a collaboration with National Geographic as well. And when he talk about it in terms of some of these young children collecting butterflies through a game, and then being able to go to their grandparents' house and pointing to the wall and go like, this is that species that I collected in my garden grove or in the forest. And being able to have that conversations and engaging their grandparents in that, I think those are priceless.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting a bit weepy now. Because we helping older people connect with their younger people around things like that. Like, what a beautiful way to go. I can't relate to my grandparents. They're old. They don't know what to do. I can't relate to my grandchildren because they can pick up any piece of technology and press buttons so fast I can't even keep up with the screen. But now we've got this beautiful way of decreasing isolation, which we know leads to increased mental health pressure, of increasing inclusion. I now have visions. Of my return to work parents who are returning, going, right, you know what we're going to do? We're going to actually start playing Pokemon Go with your kids. Because one of the things out my rehabilitation clients will say, especially those who are parents, is I feel less than because I can't do the things with my kids the way I used to. Right? I can't train soccer. I can't drive all the places that I used to take all my kids. But I'm like, do you reckon we could play Pokemon Go with them? And I reckon that's going to take off. And I know my team are going to listen to this and they're all going to be going, let's download the app right now. It's going to be like, I feel like we're on a winner here, B.
Video game is really a tool. It's not the be all and all. And I think like it's any tool, whether it's even in terms of now we are talking about AI and all that, it's a tool that if it's in the good hands, if it's in people that want to use it for good, it can be for good.
So thank you for bringing that up. Now, you are not prepared for this question, so permission to take a big deep breath. What do you think the implications will be for health professionals if we don't start embracing things like technology and AI?
I think then we lost that engagement with our clients. If I think about even earlier on as my clinical work, as I'm thinking about this podcast today and times that I talk about video games, I very kind of like fondly call my boyfriend, fiance then, my cultural consultant, because I'll have young men coming in with early psychosis episodes and they're totally shut down. They regulate their emotions through using cannabis. And what is a young female clinician going to do to engage with a young male with totally different cultural background in that sense? And I often joke about it in terms of like, so I spend half of my time learning about wrestling, about video games that they're playing, about different pop cultural elements that we can talk about in sessions to make it come alive to them. Because when some of these concepts isn't being brought up with maybe other therapists or with their parents, it's like, why are you watching wrestling? Like, all these men fighting with each other. And to be honest, I don't have any interest in wrestling. But I can see the perseverance, the grit, and sometimes some of the dynamics that's being played out in a certain tournament. And being able to talk about that, being able to bring it, be real about that, I think is definitely important. And if we don't engage in that, then we lost that engagement. And if we don't even care to find out what makes our clients tick, why do you think they want to stay in session with us?
Yeah. Gosh, B, thank you so much for bringing this conversation. So can you share just a little bit, like, what are you going to be talking about? Because we've got you for a whole hour. Well, actually, we've got you for 2 hours, but you might not know that yet. We've got you for a whole hour of presentation during the symposium. Yeah. What would you like people to be able to walk away knowing after that presentation?
I think as I'm doing the research and I'm thinking about this more, I think there's definitely a lot of myths and a lot of misconceptions that we have about games. And I really love this quote about, in one of this tech talk, definitely Beverly kind of talk about the idea of broccoli and chocolate. As clinicians, we're definitely the broccoli.
Yes.
Whether we are brain scientists, we are neuroscientists, or we are rehab counselors, we are psychologists, therapists, we know what is actually good to help our clients to improve, to gain well-being. But something that maybe we're not so good at is the engagement. We talk about engaging clients, but we don't know quite how to do it. And then she talked about then the entertainment software industry is that chocolate.
Yes.
They are so good at creating all these games, all these immersive games that grip us, that we don't want to leave the environment. But we can't just mix the two together.
Oh my God, chocolate coated broccoli. No.
That is scary. That is a scary idea, definitely. And but then we can think about actually creating a new brand of chocolate that have all these immersive, engaging elements, but then also allowing our clients to regulate, to achieve their positive mental health through playing the games. Think about if they can play their medicine.
Yeah. Oh, that's where this is going. Think about. So all the play therapists on the world, we've actually just, you know, increased their credibility because it's like, we need you. We need you to start thinking about this. We need you to help us think about this so we can stop being broccoli or Brussels sprouts or beetroot. I'm just thinking of all the vegetables I really don't like.
And as much as I like them, I just don't like them with chocolate sauce.
No, that's okay. So, B, we're coming to the end of this conversation for today. How can people learn more about you? Because I know, especially my American therapist community, they're going to be like, who is this woman? I need to know everything. How do they find you? How do they find about
you? Yep. So I'm on LinkedIn as B Lim. And if you are interested to actually like help us think about this game that we are designing, we call the game game Bichun. So you can actually find me at www.thebichungame.com. Bichun is spelled B-E-T-U-N-E-D.
Beautiful. I was hoping you would get there. What a fantastic conversation, Bea. Now, before we go any further, but the day is going to come because, you know, you're only like 45 minutes to the east of me yet. We haven't made this happen yet. When we get to a cafe and I'm ordering coffee for you, what am I ordering?
Oh, gosh. Joel, you and I have known each other virtually for 2 years, and I often joke about myself as someone that you need to find my blood count in coffee streams. So it feels like I'm trying to pick a favorite child. So let me think. I think I am a oat milk flat white girl.
Oat milk flat white, I can do. That's what my son has. I know it's a thing. That's good. My list, this cafe, we're going to have to take over an entire cafe. Because of all the people that I want to get involved and have this wonderful conversation. Bea, thank you so much for sharing enthusiastically and letting me get enthusiastic with you. I am so looking forward to you extending this conversation come September in the symposium. There will be so much information in the show notes for you, but Bea will be in the Future Proofing Health Professionals Facebook group. So she's there. If you've got questions, if you want to know more, if you just want to go and check her out, you can do that in the Facebook group. So come by, you can join, and we would love to extend this conversation. So until next episode, go be your awesome self. And that is another episode of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast done. I just want to say a big thank you to all of the people who make this podcast possible. Debbie, Annie, Vince, and Jen, you are my A-team. Without you, I couldn't make this work. And in the spirit of respect, please ask for and receive permission before you use any of my intellectual property, because you know what? Not giving appropriation to creators is just not cool. Until next episode, go be your awesome self. Oh, and before you forget, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. That's kind of important. Go do that.